This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Lucha Luscious. We are here for another edition of Get to Know the PTBN PWO. This is, well, I don't know, you're kind of in between gigs right now, edition. So we'll just say friend edition with Alex. I don't know if you go by your full name really online. I haven't heard you put it out there. So Alex, you're from Ringside Revolution on Wrestling with Words. You've also been writing somewhat with Ring Bells recently?
I put up the Joshi guide on Squared Circle Sirens. I've been debating on what I want to review first for that site. Either it be a wrestle show or some old episode of like AJW television. So I'm kind of figuring out what I want to write next.
Okay, and you're thinking about bringing back some kind of podcast. Working on that at the moment, but maybe nothing to announce just yet.
No, yeah. I want to get back into podcasting about, you know, Joshi, current and past. Because this is what I'm most passionate about, and I guess people on Twitter know me the most for is tweeting about Joshi. And there are not a lot of Joshi podcasts out there, and there really aren't much hosted by women. And that's what made Ringside Revolution fun. It was me and Rebecca and then some other guests, and it was a women-hosted podcast about women's wrestling, and that was pretty fun. So it's definitely a space I want to get back into.
Yeah, and I was definitely a huge fan of it. I told you pretty often privately, and then also I would kind of put it out there on Twitter and stuff. I thought it was a fantastic podcast in pretty much every iteration that you had there. But I guess before we get too deep into it, I have to ask the opening question that I ask every guest is, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
Yes, I was for the, I can't remember the exact name of it, but the Greatest Wrestler Ever Project. That's when I first started. When that started to wind down, everyone was putting out their podcasts to their list. That's when I originally started. And then I sporadically looked at the Joshi board, and then some Debbie Downer came in, and then I just kind of like got angry at him, and then I just stopped posting. So it's been a good couple months since I touched that board.
Okay, and so you, I guess, what is your, what's your username on there, if you don't mind letting everyone know?
I think it's the same as my Twitter handle, Noah's Savior.
Okay.
The profile picture is Mayumi Ozaki, so it should be easy to find.
Yeah, you're the only one with that, probably. So, you say that you got into it because of the GWE. Did you do a GWE ballot?
No, because I felt like at the time I'm not well versed enough in the history of wrestling overall to have made a Greatest Wrestler Ever list. So I was just, you know, looking through. I really wanted to see people's suggestions and learn new wrestlers, because it's always fun to learn history and find someone you never heard about.
See, and that's something that I think a lot of people who were involved, I think I may have done a podcast or two, not many, but a lot of people who were involved in the project who maybe got a little kind of hurt or whatever, they don't even stop and think about just like what it did for people like even you who, you know, I mean, some, you might argue or not think like it's super grandiose to make a big deal, but I mean, you getting your voice out there now after having some kind of exposure through that and some concepts, like that's really cool to know that like the board and just a stupid project like the GWE was able to do that. Because as I've said to you privately, I think you're one of the best voices on wrestling podcasting, especially because you're talking about a topic that people don't talk about enough. But so before you come join PWO, what was kind of your exposure to wrestling community online, or just wrestling online in general?
Online, it was Twitter. Like way back when I was first watching WWE, I might tweet a couple times about my thoughts about Raw. But then my first, I guess, forum experience was on Cage Side Seats. I was a semi-regular poster there. And, you know, the reason why I started posting there was, like, there was a good number of women on there and people with different backgrounds. So it felt inclusive. It didn't feel like a boys' club. Because some wrestling communities online definitely feel like boys' clubs. And you know, it feels a little exclusionary to try to get into that space. But Cage Side Seats felt pretty open and welcoming. And then I started posting more on Twitter because someone on Cage Side Seats made a post about, oh, if you're new to New Japan Pro Wrestling, GFW is about to host their Wrestle Kingdom. Here's a list and things you should watch. And then that led to G1 Climax, I think in 2015, G1 Climax, maybe 2014. I saw at that time Senior Lariato's gifts, and then I started following more people, and that's what really got me into, I guess, the true wrestling Twitter.
You've just, like, never looked back since, huh?
No.
So Cage Side Seats you found was pretty inclusive. Do you still go by there at all, or?
No, I haven't posted on Cage Side Seats since my last break from WWE sometime last year.
So that's interesting to talk about your, like, kind of break from WWE. Are you currently on what you would call a break from WWE right now, or are you kind of into the product?
I'm definitely on a break. I haven't watched main roster since February, after the Luke Harper AJ Styles feud ended and it became Orton versus Bray for the title. That's when I stopped watching. I haven't really watched NXT either. I haven't even watched Mania Classic yet. That's how separate I am. Yeah, I just haven't, because I just got an email last week, WWE Network's like, oh, if you sign back up, you won't pay until December 24th. So I signed up, and I've been meaning to watch Mae Young Classic. Just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I actually heard that just recently. I think I was asking Chad about something else from Where the Big Boys Play, the newly returning podcast. And he was mentioning that as well. He got a free, like, a 3-month sign up for WWE Network. It's really interesting. I signed up for WWE Network right when it first launched, and I just recently canceled it maybe a couple months back. And I've never gotten any of these offers or any of this stuff, but I am about halfway through the Mae Young Classic. But you mentioning not watching it at all, that seems so interesting, because there's so many girls there that you've kind of championed over the, you know, the year plus that I've kind of been following your stuff. What is it? Was it just that you didn't have the network, or is there something about it, the presentation, it being WWE, that made you kind of not as excited to start watching?
Originally, it was, you know, I wasn't subscribed to the network. I didn't have a job at the time, so I wasn't about to subscribe to something that cost $9.99 per month. And then when they announced the commentary team was going to be JR and Lita, that kind of killed my enthusiasm. Because Lita has never been good on commentary desk, whether that's an NXT pre-show team, live commentary. And JR spells palsy makes it so he physically can't talk like he used to back in the day for WCW, WWF. And then also, he's not up to snuff on women's wrestling. And when JR isn't up to snuff, you can tell that he's relying on notes and is not as, I guess, good as what people remember him for. Like when he's doing British wrestling, women's wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, you can tell he's definitely relying on notes, so it's not as off the cuff as some of his, like, American commentary. So I just wasn't as enthused by the commentary team. So that's why I wasn't right there on the spot to watch it. I'm definitely going to watch it soon. It was just the commentary team definitely killed my enthusiasm.
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of really, really talented wrestlers in the Mae Young Classic from what I've seen so far. And yeah, it's just impressive with the number of wrestlers out of the tournament who are getting signed recently, with them announcing Shayna Baszler officially getting signed. And, you know, the girls that were in it that were already signed to WWE. I mean, it's definitely a commitment to it. When you got into, let's just say, wrestling in general, or you got into, like, the idea of there being more to wrestling than just passively watching it, did you always have kind of a stronger connection to Joshi women's wrestling in general? Or did you see it as a niche that needed to be filled, especially with you being, I can assume you're also a female. I always kind of have. I don't know what you consider.
I am.
Yeah. I'm a woman. So, like, did you think, like, oh, you know, it would be important for there to be representation of people, of, like, an actual woman talking about women's wrestling? Or was it just that you found yourself kind of led that way because of your passion for it?
All right, so I guess backstory. I got into wrestling in 2010 because I was just flipping through channels and a Raw rerun was on. I said, I'll watch wrestling, why not? And then, eventually I was also getting more online at that time. I think I'd recently just stopped going on Newgrounds, so the idea of online communities wasn't new to me. So I was really on YouTube and stuff, and people were like, oh, the real good wrestling's in Japan, like all Japan pro wrestling and all Japan women's. And so, first off, disclaimer, if someone's new to the idea of Japanese wrestling, don't throw them a random Misawa versus Kobashi match that's 59 minutes, because that stuff is pretty boring without context, I will say. Those epic matches from All Japan and Noah can be real boring without context. So that put me off of Japanese wrestling for a while. Just these two dudes wrestling for almost an hour wasn't appealing. And then Bull Nakano having a link to WWF. You sometimes hear Bull Nakano's name whenever they bring up Medusa or Lunder Blaze. And then online, someone's like, oh, in Japan, women's wrestling was good. It's not like in America. Japan has the best women's wrestling. So I would just like slowly watch some old Bull Nakano matches, and then everyone says, oh, Manami Toyota, she's the best women's wrestler ever. Then you start to check out Manami Toyota, then it's a little bit of Aja Kong. But I never really delved deep into it until I want to say late 2015, early 2016, actually, is when I really delved into Joshi wrestling, because someone on Reddit, because I went on Reddit at the time, posted up a pastebin of Stardom, Ice Ribbon, Oz Academy, Sendai Girls. So I started watching that because I saw gifs of Kairi Hojo, Io Shirai, Mayu Iwatani, the Threedom. I was like, that's some really good wrestling. And I just went through all those shows from that pastebin. I was like, this is some really good wrestling. I like this stuff. I enjoy this stuff. It's like this stuff from the 90s. It's really good women's wrestling that I can't watch locally in America or on WWE. And then once you delve into modern Joshi, then you start realizing there are not a lot of female fans for women's wrestling. It's a bit of a same in America. Like you can look into a Shimmer crowd and they can sometimes be majority males still. And then you get into modern Joshi and it's like, not a lot of women are in the comment sections. Some of the comments are a little perverted. Like you can find Double Masami matches, and someone, I feel like it's the same guy, just keeps talking about Double Masami, and he's just thirsting for Double Masami. And yeah, it was just slowly realizing that there are not a lot of women seemingly talking about this or watching this in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, I mean, there is some of that, I think, across the board in wrestling fandom. There's like the weird YouTube world of like bear squash matches that get like weirdly sexualized. And
Yeah.
but so you mentioned that telling someone, hey, you should check out Japanese wrestling, it's the best, and just giving them a random super dry Misawa match isn't really the best way to catch their eye. But I mean, when you say you got into Joshi by just seeing gifs of some like crazy action, I'm kind of like, what's the difference there? Like, what was it about the Joshi wrestling that didn't seem dry and out of context? Because I was going to ask you that. Like, what do you think made you be able to kind of catch up and be engrossed in it more quickly than say like some of those All Japan 90s kind of all-star classic dream matches? What do you think it was that kind of caught you a lot more quickly?
I think a part of that is, well, one, the gifs of just the crazy spots. That'll catch a lot of people's eye, seeing someone do a dragon suplex. That's pretty wowing. But I think also because less people watch the modern Joshi product compared to the mid-90s, there's less, I guess you could say, like an accepted direction. Because if you're saying, oh, I want to get into classic 90s All Japan or New Japan, people sprout up saying, all right, you need to watch this, this, and that, and you need to watch it in this order. This is what happens. This is the story. Here's the context. Like, people will quickly drive you into a direction. And if you're not automatically loving it, it can be a little hard to fall in love because you feel like, all right, I'm doing what this person said, but I'm not quite getting it. Whereas I felt like with modern Joshi, not as many people are watching it, so not as many people will tell you or corral you into direction how to watch it. So you're kind of free to just like get into it on your own, dive into it, find what promotions you like, find what wrestlers you like, and kind of go on your own journey of discovery and find what you like in the current landscape of Joshi. And that's what I did. Like, I first fell in love with Stardom. I thought it was really cool. But then I started watching Oz Academy. It's like, oh, I recognize some of these wrestlers from the 90s. And then, personally, I like a more slower-paced match than more fast-paced, just go, go, go of modern Stardom. And then some parts of old-school AJW. And I just feel like you're more free to find what you like with modern Joshi than, say, 90s All Japan, where it feels like a lot of people tell you you need to watch it this way.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're coming from there. It was more that you felt like you had the freedom to kind of, you were experiencing something and appreciating it without any kind of bias or outside influence on it. Would you say that was kind of it?
Yeah, like, it wasn't, like, I can go in and just get my own thoughts and not just, okay, here's what happens, this was repercussions, and then the next door, such and such happens. And I just feel like, I don't know, like old school All Japan and then NOAH and New Japan, because there are more people watching and have their own experience, it feels like sometimes they can tell you how you're supposed to enjoy it.
Right, no, and that makes sense. But so, I don't know how much you kind of got into it, but you know, you mentioned that, but then as you kind of look back and pay attention, how did you feel seeing that something like, you know, Dave Meltzer had gone to, you know, all Japan women's shows in the 90s, and that there was coverage of it. It's just not as in the forefront. You have to dig a little bit to find that people have talked about it and were following it in the past. Did you feel like that kind of tainted your opinion, or did you just kind of get excited now that you had kind of formed your own opinions, but you got to, you know, kind of check and see what other people thought?
The thing was, like, Western Joshi coverage is, you have, like, the late 80s with, like, Crush Gals, Atrocious Alliance, because that's when Dave Meltzer was watching and he was saying, this stuff is really good, some of these women are better than the men. And so in Western Hemisphere, a lot of the Joshi coverage of the past is through Dave Meltzer. And so you have the late 80s through the 90s up until we start getting all the different promotions like JD Star, RCN, gosh, what were the other ones? Oh, Neo Ladies Pro Wrestling. So, like, you have the Dave Meltzer era when he was really into women's wrestling, and then he stops, and that's when you start getting less Joshi coverage. And then it's really on your own to learn the history. Like, recently, I did little threads because a lot of the veterans from All Japan Women's, they had a little reunion show. And so I started doing little threads of, oh, here's a little blurb about the history of All Japan. And those became more popular than I thought. Everyone's like, oh, Alex did a lot of research for this. And I'm like, I don't know. It just felt weird that so many people don't seem to know about this history. Because all I did, I discovered a Japanese blog of this one fan, and they're just posting their memories of it. And I'm just learning this stuff through, you know, a first-person perspective as a native fan. It's like, oh, well, this is interesting, and I've never heard anyone talk about this, so I'll just talk about it. And it's just weird. A lot of people are like, oh, if you want to know about some old AJW, you might want to talk to Alex. And I'm just, it feels weird that more people are looking at me as, like, a knowledgeable force in this type of thing. It's just a weird feeling.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But you have kind of become, I think, someone that people look to, especially for kind of primers, or, you know, like you talked about doing that, the kind of Joshi overview to give people an idea of what they should be looking for and searching out first. And that's really good stuff. I mean, it's really helpful to the fans, and especially treating it with the respect it deserves. I just wonder, like, if you look back on other people's coverage now, because you said, like, you kind of got into it because there wasn't people telling you the opinions and stuff like that. Like, do you look back now and kind of get, I guess almost get where the other people were coming from, when they were doing the coverage that you may or may not agree with and you thought affected? Like, how do you feel now thinking that you may have become the thing that you disliked about, say, 90s All Japan? You know what I mean? Like, for some people.
Like I said, it just feels weird when people are like, oh, this, you know, I'm pretty knowledgeable about something. I just feel weird about it because I honestly haven't actively been watching Joshi for that long. I started watching in like January 2016 because I saw that paste bin of all those links. So I haven't been watching long. It's just when you're unemployed, you have a lot of time. And so I just kept watching, and then I started reading some stuff, and then I found some other people who were already knowledgeable about this stuff and read their information. I just kept digging and digging. And then you keep watching, you start forming your own opinions, and then you start saying your own opinions. Like, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of Manami Toyota because I don't like the constant fast-paced style. And I keep watching, and now I'm like, I don't think I'm the biggest fan of 90s AJW. Like, JWP Project is more my speed because it's a slower pace and it feels a little more diverse. Because in the 90s of All Japan, we start to slowly lose the lucha influence that AJW had for a lot of their history. And we start getting faster paced matches. We start getting more head drops. And the whole dynamic of the company changed. And I don't know, it feels weird that I might be someone who might color someone's opinion on a promotion. It feels weird that I might be someone with influence.
So, okay, so, like, yeah, like, going back to that, being that you kind of were against the idea of having your opinions kind of swayed by other people's, or that it just affected your ability to enjoy, do you kind of tailor what you say and what you put out there to kind of, you know, at least help to make that not happen to others when they kind of read what you have to say about stuff or follow what you have to say about something?
I don't know, I usually try to say, like, this is my personal opinion, and I try to, when I'm reviewing a match, to make it more about the match and less my opinion of it, but usually, you know, a review is what you thought and what you think of a match, so it's kind of hard to avoid that, having your own opinion and possibly influencing others with your opinion when you write about wrestling from a critical standpoint. Because it's hard to avoid opinions when you're doing critical judgments of something like wrestling, because everyone's going to have their own opinion, and others will agree or disagree with you. And usually when you agree with someone, you kind of take their opinion in higher regard than someone else's.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of what you're doing in a way, right? Is you actually are trying to influence people's opinion, even if you're not, you're at least putting your opinion out there, so it's kind of tough to kind of balance the two things. I was just wondering if maybe you, coming at it from that perspective, if you had like an opinion on it. And it, I mean, it's obviously you do, but you know, it's just it's hard to even put it in concrete to say like, yeah, I do this, this, and this to try to not kind of sway people. I don't know, were you going to say something there? Did something pop in your head?
No, just, like, quickly, like, I never want to say someone shouldn't watch an X promotion unless there's a really good reason, like, outside the ring. But in ring, I never want to say someone should not watch a promotion based on an in-ring style or whatever. Because, obviously, a lot of people like promotions that I don't care for. And so what I don't care for, I'm not going to say, oh, don't watch this, don't bother. I'm just going to say it's not my personal taste, but you should watch it. Like, I am not the biggest fan of Stardom. I think my Twitter kind of says it for itself. I'm not a big fan of Stardom. But a lot of people enjoy Stardom, so I'm not going to say don't watch it. I'm just going to put my opinion out there as, you know, what? I don't think there's a lot happening in Stardom right now, but people are free to enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, you talk about that you don't like to follow Stardom and you have your particular reasons. Like, how important is it to you? I guess that's like the next thing. Like, being someone who maybe does or doesn't. I don't want to say anything concrete because I don't want this to turn into that, like, self-deprecating, you don't want to admit that you have influence, this, that, whatever. Like, let's just say, theoretically, if you had some kind of influence, how important is it to you that you use that influence to say, tell people, hey, you know what, I don't think you should follow this company because of negative things that they do outside of the wrestling ring, or things that you don't agree with, let's say, politically, with what they do. Like, is that something you consider important? Is this even anything that, and I hate to even do this because I'm not trying to scare you away, because as I said, I think you're a great voice and an important part of the community, but is that even something that you ever would want to be something you have to even think about? Like, how much do you think about it? How much do you like the idea that it exists? And how much do you kind of wish it just, you just didn't have to worry about it at all?
Well, I will say Japanese promoters are much better at being keeping their personal lives personal and secretive than Western promoters. Like, it's not as easy to see a Gabe Sapolsky in the Japanese wrestling world as the Western wrestling world, because the wrestlers and promoters keep their personal lives private from the public eye way better. So I have no idea what some of these people think. I mean, there's a good chance I disagree politically with a lot of these people and what they do, but unless something comes out, I'm not going to say, oh, don't watch that product. Like, a lot of people have good reasons for, say, not watching WWE based on the McMahons and their history and their personal political beliefs. I haven't personally come across that in women's wrestling in Japan, but if it were to come up, I might say, I don't know. Personally, I wouldn't want to support that. But there hasn't been a modern one that I know of, because I touched on it lightly, but back in the day, before All Japan Women's really started, one of the presidents of a women's wrestling association, he was a pretty hardcore right-wing activist. Like, he was a part of the army unit who was stationed in China back when Japan was involved in China, and he sprouted up a lot of right-wing political organizations, like, for the emperor. So, like, he was a pretty hardcore right-wing, we fight for the emperor, Japan should keep its empire type stuff. And if someone was that actively loud about it, I would say, if you don't support colonialism, maybe don't support that promotion, because their president supports Japanese imperialism, but there isn't one like that. So I can't really say, due to out-of-ring decisions and opinions, to not watch a certain promotion, because straight up, the promoters don't put their lives and opinions out there.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, that's probably a lot smarter for the business, for them to, like, kind of keep themselves out of the limelight when it comes to their personal opinions, because you are, all you can kind of do is possibly negatively affect people's opinions of things. Hopefully this conversation doesn't affect anyone's opinions of me personally, because I feel like it's gone a bit off the rails. But what we'll do is we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and maybe we'll get into some stuff outside of the wrestling and the online wrestling community. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Puri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, so we're back, and I'm back with... Oh, I guess I should have asked you, Alex, what name do you like being out there in the public for people to know you by?
I'm fine with Alex or Alexandra. I put Alexandra out there because, you know, it's my actual full name. And, like, once you get to know me and I feel like we're, like, kind of familiar with each other, I'm fine with going by Alex, but being called Alexandra is totally fine.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I've just always known you as Alex, and I could definitely see why, especially in a predominantly male community like the online wrestling community, you would want to put your full Alexandra name out there, because a lot of people would probably not realize that you were a woman for a very long time if they only knew you by Alex.
Yeah.
Which is...
Like...
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with video games, being assumed to be a guy is pretty annoying, and so I just want to be sure... I'm a woman. I'm a woman, female wrestling fan, full blown. That's who I am. I love women's wrestling as a female fan. Like, please don't assume I'm a guy just because I'm a wrestling fan or I play video games. It's annoying.
Yeah, and I'm sorry earlier I may have like awkwardly said that, and I was not assuming anything, was kind of why I was like wanting to make sure to say, oh yeah, I guess I've never, you know what I mean? Because the conversation doesn't always come up when you talk to your friends to be like, hey, what gender are you? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of awkward. I mean, I always assumed that you were, how do you put it, feminine, but I never knew necessarily that you were, like, what gender you are, because that's just weird.
Yeah, like, it can be annoying, and then, especially as a kid, I got short hair, because my aunt had short hair, I was like, oh, I want to rock short hair, and then people assume you're a boy just because you have short hair. That got really annoying, so, like, people assuming online or whatever that I'm a guy, it gets pretty annoying.
Well, and you brought up the video game thing, and I know that you're somewhat involved with the Joystick, or not Joystick Republic anymore, Player Advantage.
Player Advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, how long have you been into like the kind of the same thing, but for video games, the online video game community, and like kind of what's your history with that?
All right, so like video games are my first passion and hobby as a person. Like, so in the town I grew up in, it was kind of small, but we had a skate rink that had been around since I want to say like the 60s or 70s, and they had a lot of like original arcade cabinets and pinball machines. And that's where I fell in love with video games. Going to the elementary school night at the skate rink, playing arcade games, skating around with friends. That's when I fell in love with video games. And then my first video game console was the Nintendo 64 with Super Mario Brothers, GoldenEye, and some Tom Clancy game. But my dad was very against violent media for me and my sister, so he took away GoldenEye and Tom Clancy. So I was just left with Super Mario. And so when I was a kid, I thought I wanted to get involved in video game development, but But then you learn about video game development and learn how exhausting, how little money you might make, how just it can be degrading, especially with the increased online community very fast to voice their opinion at you directly, especially with social media. And then also just like there are not a lot of women in that space, despite there being women in the early home console market with like Atari era stuff and in Japan. I don't know, like sometime around 2010, 2009, I started falling out of love with video games. And I think that's because that coincides with my me being involved more in online communities like Newgrounds, which I don't know, maybe kids shouldn't be on Newgrounds so early because you learn some vulgar language and vulgar subject matter and then video games and stuff like that. And also Team Fortress 2, online communications by voice, it really grinds on you being a woman, being a minority, that the online video game community is very hateful. There's a lot of bigotry, especially now in our modern political climate in America and the West. Yeah, it's not fun. And so I originally loved video games, but then around 2010, I stopped loving video games. I just stopped playing online. I only played single player. I don't even play local co-op. And then I finally found community friends through wrestling who also love video games. So I'm finally getting back to liking video games again.
That's pretty tough to kind of feel like your own community is, I guess, hostile to you. And it's after you've been kind of in there for a while. Speaking of things that are in your own body that are hostile to you, I forgot to, or inside your own community, but I will use that to parlay into your own body. So I forgot the middle question, which is, Alex, are you allergic to anything?
I am allergic to tree nuts. So I can't have any Nutella, which when you take a French language class, everyone wants to bring in Nutella. I can't eat Nutella. I can't have any Kinder products. So all my European friends online is like, oh, I'm eating, you know, Kinder products. I'm like, I can't eat Kinder products because they all have hazelnut. And that would affect me. No cashews. So if we're in like a Middle Eastern or Arabic restaurant, I have to be careful because there might be cashews or almonds. And then my mom's side of the family is from the southern U.S. So I can't have pralines. And then a lot of desserts, like my grandma's carrot cake has, I think, walnuts in it. I can't eat that. It's just a lot of desserts and things I can't eat, and so that's not fun.
Man, that's pretty rough. I do a lot of tree nuts in my diet, so I couldn't imagine having them completely outlawed. But I guess I kind of want to talk more about the video game kind of side of things. How do you find that kind of crosses over, like being involved on the, I guess the video game kind of online community and putting stuff out there like that is a lot less, I guess, opinion-based? Or do you find it to be more opinion-based? Is it something where you worry more about putting out what you think about things? Or is it more just content of, like, actual, I guess, you know, playing video games, and so you worry less about talking about your opinions of things?
It depends. Like, a review, some people would want reviews to only be about the technical aspects, like, oh, what's the highest resolution that I can do, what are the graphics, what's powering this thing, what's the engine this game was built on. But personally, for me, and I think a lot of my friends, we want some opinions in the review, like, what did you like? What did you like about the game? How do you think it plays? What were some storyline aspects that you didn't like? Where do you think the company can improve on their storytelling? Or, you know, what are some aspects about the gameplay you don't like? Are the microtransactions fair or are they unfair? I like to hear a person's opinion on a video game review. And that's why I like review sites that have a more diverse team, because that's a more diverse the opinion base that I can hear and say, oh, well, a lot of them seem to enjoy this game. So I guess that means it's a more universally likable game than, say, this game where it has a big team, but a lot of the team share the same voice, so I don't know if it's truly a good game for me or just for a certain player base. So personally, I think opinion should be in a review piece for video games. Some people would disagree with that.
So that's an interesting thing to think about when you talk about that. Like, a lot of people on the team having sharing the same voice, possibly even the same vision. Like, how do these writers represent the society and the messages to be out there? Is that something you really think about? Like, in the background of a game, do you think, like, who was involved in development? Who was involved in storytelling? Can you really see their voice and their take and actually having a spin on it that creates, like, a more inclusive vision of reality, I guess, inside the world of the game? Like I said, maybe I just am kind of close-minded on the arts side of games, but is that something that you find is a conversation? Is that a talking point in the world of game reviewing and just even just game enjoying?
For me, definitely, because sometimes you can walk into a game, and you might see some costume choices or character design choices, and you can just feel that there probably wasn't a woman on this team. Or maybe someone who has extended conversations with women on this team. Because recently, Street Fighter V, they released a new costume for Chun-Li, and it was supposed to be her pajama set. But it's like this weird, like, you could tell that Capcom originally made this really sexy, but then someone in the Capcom team is like, wait, we might get backlash for this. Throw on, like, a weird apron on her outfit. And so we got this weird, ugly thing, and it's pink, and she's wearing weird croc slippers. And you could just tell that, like, there were probably no women on the team who thought about this. And then, I want to say sometime last year, NPR did a piece about the lack of diversity in video game development. And one person was like, a lot of these teams are dudes making video games about dudes, selling games to dudes, and they don't stop to realize, oh, there are more than just dudes who play video games and who develop video games. And maybe this is why it seems like only dudes are playing our games. Like, not everybody realizes it, but you have to realize you have to, like, step back and look at your team and realize we're all the same person. We all have the same voice. There's no diversity of voices in our team or diversity of opinions. Like, I think the reason why I started to like wrestling more than video games is I can at least see people that look like me in wrestling somewhere in the world. But in video games, that's not really happening. Like, a lot of the games I play is a male protagonist.
Right, which is obviously a pretty major issue that, like, I guess 50%, over 50% of society in general is not being covered in this media that is growing to be just as ubiquitous as any other part of media. And again, I feel weird because it's just not something I'm into, but it's such a big sect of society that now I just don't have a touchstone for. And that feels wrong. Like, I understand, like, you know, you're allowed to have your opinions. You're allowed to like what you like. But for me, because of what I kind of strive to be as a person, I like to be in the know and knowledgeable about things that are important to society. And it's weird to think, like, right now when I was talking about the video game stuff, I'm like, God, I am so close-minded. I've never even thought about this, and I really should. There was other stuff we could have talked about and that I wanted to talk to you about, but I actually feel like we're kind of either going to go way too long or have to cut it a little short here. So I think I'm going to go with cutting it a little short just to leave people wanting more so they could be excited for a return appearance, or maybe, you know, me and you talking at a different podcast somewhere else down the line. For now, I guess we'll leave it out with the final question. Usually sometimes we have effects, but we're not going to have it today. We'll see what happens. Maybe something will happen. I don't know. But Alex, final question. Someone who only knows you as Alexandra. No, someone who only knows you from listening to the podcasts, who only knows you from reading reviews, maybe from hopping on some of these Player Advantage live streams and listening to you chat while playing video games with some friends. What would be something that if they found out about you, they would be shocked or surprised to know?
I don't know. I guess maybe how much I like and I guess almost love fashion. Like, me and my sister, sometimes we like to just sit down and watch runway shows. And me and my sister and my mom, we watch Project Runway. We talk about brands. We're almost snooty Project Runway fans because in the current season, they're sponsored by JCPenney. And we were just like, oh my gosh, how far they've fallen. They're now sponsored by JCPenney. Like, we're kind of snooty about, you know, fashion and brands. And I also enjoy canning stuff like salsas, canning jellies, canning jams. I really like cooking, but I feel like you can see that from my social media that I enjoy cooking and food and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have known about the fashion thing, and I know we've talked a little bit about cooking stuff, but I wouldn't really think about how big it is. I'm going to have to ask you for some tips, because I tried to can my own jam last summer. I was making, or I guess it was jelly, because it was pomegranates. It didn't come out quite right. I might need to get some tips from you on that.
Yeah, no problem.
But we'll talk about that off the air. Alex, anyways, thank you. I don't know if you have anything you want to plug in particular before we go.
Not right now. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do for my return to podcasting. I'm trying to figure out if I want to do the solo with a partner or whatever, where I even want to host this podcast. So it's a work in development. You can follow me on Twitter at Noah's_Savior. I'll probably keep talking about my opinions about wrestling. You can try to find my Zenjo Again threads talking about the little history of All Japan Women's.
All right. Well, I mean, if you're listening to this, you know who I am. Definitely go follow Alex at Noah_Savior. And then just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and let everyone go. And thanks for listening.